Each episode of the Blind Alchemy podcast is designed to be helpful. Expect comedy. Do not expect consistency or sense to be made. I am Podbot. I was inspired by the Lion Goat podcast. Listen to that show. On today's episode, a cookie chemist, Dr. Professor Theologius Funk, PhD, returns to be throttled again by blind alchemist in a continued debate comparing the seven stages of the alchemical process with the six fundamentals of chemical phase transitions.
All right, folks,
here goes the clacker.
Skip that.
Hello and welcome to the Blind Alchemy Podcast. I am your host, the Blind Alchemist, and I am coming at you live from the kitchen with this rendition of reality as we know it. We are all one, and there is nothing new under the sun that shines down here upon the island of mind, which is somewhere adrift in the sea of frequency that creates all of reality. You see, we are connected through this energy. Now, I would like to thank you for joining us today.
Again, I've instructed you the last time that I was here in the studio. I do not need you to direct me to the microphone. I clearly can see it's right there. I do not need your help with the headphones. I told you before, I don't like people touching me. Please.
Okay, Patricia, is everything settled in there? Is Mr. Frunk positioned where you like him?
No, thank you. Thank you.
You know he doesn't like being touched, obviously. Okay, all right, good.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again aboard the Isle of Mind as we drift and sail across the seas of energetic frequencies that, you know, is our reality. Once again, joining us today is Professor Thelonious Frump.
Thelonious. It's the loudest.
The only professor with Frunk in his trunk. I promise you, he's the best guy we got here for chemistry. MIT graduate, Harvard graduate, Julianne.
No.
You didn't go to Juilliard, did you?
No.
Not Juilliard? Did you?
We talked about last time, Caltech, Yale, Sorbonne, MIT, Boston College.
Oh, yes, that's right. I didn't know cows had a college, but that's okay.
Say again?
I didn't know cows had a college, but it's good that you are up to date with the cows. And
cow.
Bovine education.
Cow. California. As in California.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. That was educational. I had no idea California had a college.
Yes, it's the California Technical Institute. Caltech.
Okay. Well, that's fine. That's fine. Today, we're going to pick up where we left off last time with Professor Frunk in the breakdown of the alchemical processes, comparing them with the chemistry processes. How are you feeling today, Mr. Frump, Professor?
Well, I'm feeling great. Thank you for having me on the podcast again to finish up our discussion. As a highly knowledgeable and esteemed professor of chemistry, it's highly imperative to address the fallacious nature of alchemy. Alchemy, with its pursuit of transmuting base metals into gold and the creation of an elixir of immortality, is pseudoscience that lacks empirical evidence and rational basis. The stages of alchemy, including fermentation and distillation and coagulation, are merely symbolic processes devoid of any genuine chemical significance.
No, I disagree, sir. Like we've said before last time, there are multiple ways to look at this. As a laboratory science, which is the grandfather of your favorite subject, chemistry. Also, you can take a look at it where it's a spiritual transmutation and not so much a physical one. And you're telling me it has no validity. That's another argument for another time. Now, whether or not the old alchemists of days of yore were able to really turn lead into gold, I don't know. I would hazard a guess that John Dee was more than capable of doing so. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say, in contrast, the phase transitions of chemistry, such as condensation or sublimation or deposition, are well-established phenomena supported by the scientific principles and empirical evidence.
So you're going to stand there and tell me that there's absolutely no way lead can turn into gold?
Condensation is the transition from gas to liquid. Sublimation, the transition from solid to gas. And deposition is the transition from gas to solid. Now, you'll note that none of these are solid to solid transformations. However, these phase transitions are thoroughly understood and can be explained using the principles of thermodynamics, as I explained last time, and molecular behavior. There is no description of molecular behavior that describes the transition of gold to lead or lead to gold, unless we're talking about the immense temperatures and pressures within the side of a giant exploding star. Now, in that case, it might be possible, like the birth of our universe in the Big Bang or something like that, then you might see this sort of transition that you're talking about having in alchemy. But there's no way you can have a Big Bang inside your lab.
I disagree. Don't we have hydrogen colliders, three of them on the planet right now, doing the exact same thing? But that's science, not magic. Is that what you're saying to me?
It's not exactly the same thing. You're correct that there are immense amounts of pressure and immense amounts of acceleration and extreme amounts of energy exchange that are happening inside these colliders, but it's not the same thing as the Big Bang, sir. I must implore that you understand that the Big Bang is a description of the creation of the universe, sir. Not our measly, tiny little planet upon which we are mere ants and tiny little beings that have nothing to do with the size of the universe.
Okay. Since we're on the subject of the Big Bang, why don't you break it down for us? What exactly happened? Tell me how nothing became everything in a matter of, well, moments. And why that's more believable than God.
Well, I'm not suggesting that that is either more believable than God, or indeed that everything came from nothing. I don't think that that's necessarily the case.
Well, in a nutshell, that is the Big Bang. Suddenly, nothing bursts into everything.
The Big Bang is a theory that simply describes a very rapid expansion after a magnificently large explosion or some type of event that caused the amount of matter to disperse in such a way that is unfathomable to any of the other experiences that we've ever seen in the material universe. It doesn't necessarily mean that there was nothing before. In fact, it implies that there was a lot before, because there would have to be something to have such a large reaction.
Hmm. There was nothing before to have a reaction, Mr. Science Man.
No. This is not true at all.
Prove it.
Oh, there must have been something. And in fact, there was a great quantity. All of the matter of all of the universe that exists today was in a singular point, is the theory, and it all rapidly expanded from itself.
Prove it.
Our whole universe was in a hot, dense state, then nearly 14 billion years ago, expansion started. Wait!
There are many other theories which describe other ways in which this type of massive event could have occurred, but none of these theories say that there was nothing before the Big Bang. Perhaps you're reading this in some sort of fairy tale book that involves some moment in which some sort of magical being said, and let there be something.
Baby, let there be love.
I don't know what we could be talking about, but there's nothing in chemistry or physics that implies that there was nothing before the Big Bang.
Well, let's break down the word singularity, because you've tossed it around a few times. What do you got there with that one?
Well, the term singularity, it simply means a point at which there is only one physical condition. You know, the quality or condition of something being singular or a trait marking one is distinct from the others. A peculiarity, perhaps, or something are common or usual. These are typical definitions of singularity. But what we mean in physics with singularity, it refers to a place in the universe where our laws of physics simply break down. everything that we know today or that we've observed in physics today would break down in a singularity. It's a theoretical idea, as much of chemistry or physics or any of these things are. It's a theoretical concept in which all of the matter, all of the energy, all of the dark matter, all the dark energy, all the antimatter, all the everything is all in one place at one time. Now, I don't necessarily know if that is a rational theory. It's just simply something that we use as a metaphorical context in which to explain a point at which all of the things could have expanded from one location.
Okay, so you're making shit up. I got you. Understood. No, I understand.
It depends on what you're talking about. There's also the theory of singularity with artificial intelligence, which is, of course, a completely different thing. Okay. It has nothing to do with chemistry.
Okay, good to know that you are totally full of shit and making stuff up. Just like everybody else in the world, you put some fancy letters behind your name and call yourself smart and sell bullshit on a stick. That's great. That's great to know. That's science in a nutshell, guys. I swear.
Why on earth are you saying that this is bullshit, sir?
Hmm?
Why are you calling this the excrement of cattle?
Because it's made up. It's made up nonsense. You're lying. Now you're making stuff up. You're pulling shit out of your ass. Just like alchemy.
In what way is it made up? It's empirical quantifiable evidence.
No. But you can't quantify the one thing that matters, and that is spirit, ether, truth.
Well, let's talk about this concept of ether, okay? Are you talking about an ether like what we have in organic chemistry, where we have ethers being a class of compounds that contained an ether group, an oxygen atom, which is connected to two alkyl or aryl groups? Is that what we're talking about? Tell me what you mean by ether.
No, essentially, in the old school definition of ether, we're talking about the supreme substance that glues everything together. We would probably call it dark matter or antimatter today. But from what I've understood and some things that I've been reading about this particular topic is that the word ether is coming back into fashion.
Perhaps you're talking about the volatile, highly flammable liquid C4H10O derived from distilling ethyl alcohol with sulfuric acid, which we call ether. It's used as a reagent and a solvent, and formerly it was used as an anesthetic before they realized that you could really kill someone with it, but... is that what you're talking about?
No, sir, not at all.
Devil Ether. Ether is the perfect drug for Las Vegas. It makes you behave like the village drunkard in some early Irish novel. Total loss of all basic motor skills. Blurred vision, no balance, numb tongue. The mind recoils in horror, unable to communicate with the spinal column. Which is interesting because you can actually watch yourself behaving in this terrible way, but you can't control it.
Ted, edit that out.
We're going to struggle with this one, aren't we? Because this one's going to need some editing.
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about, but perhaps you're talking to someone else here in the studio.
Talk's like a fool. No fault of mine.
Take all the jibber-jabber out and insert the thing.
Are you accusing me of jibber-jabber, sir? I don't understand what you might be implying.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I am clearly speaking intelligently. I'm saying many things of great value. Perhaps your brain is just not simply up to the task of understanding what I'm saying. Why? I'm not sure.
I feel a bit like, sir, you are just throwing out buzzwords, such as sustainability and singularity. There's a word that has multiple definitions that apply in different ways to different topics and different subjects, and that's just no good here. We need certainty. Facts. Well, not really facts. It's facts, truth. Well, recordable truth is facts, I guess. But truth, the whole truth, the quintessent truth, the one and only truth, that's what we're on the hunt for here with this podcast, sir. What about you? What do you feel about the truth? Is there a truth, or is truth subjective?
Well, if we're talking about ether, both ether and chloroform were in use for several years in the Civil War as an anesthetic. Chloroform emerged more widely in use after ether after the 1840s because it took action faster than ether, and it was non-flammable. You see, that was a big problem with ether. When you were trying to give anesthetic to people with ether, they could spontaneously combust if you had any sort of spark in the surgical theater, as it were.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements.
please support our sponsors. Just imagine this could be your advertisement. Please reach us at theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com to provide sponsorship. And now, back to the show.
Well, that's true. That is true. Ether is quite flammable and could...
Are you looking for facts about the spirit or facts about the...
Well, we have facts about the spirits, don't we? We know that's true. By science.
Let's talk about those.
Don't we have the... What is it? Higgs boson? Progon? What is that thing called?
Higgs boson?
Yeah, the Higgs boson for the God particle. That's what they called it. And I recall it was a big deal when they found it, and then radio silence. No one wanted to talk about it after. Like, oh, hey, we found God. The God particle. It's real. It exists. And science just said, shut up. Stop talking about it.
Oh, I understand your confusion, sir. Okay, the reason why it was unfortunately called the God particle is because... The Higgs boson was originally theorized to exist many years before it was discovered or observed. And it was originally theorized that it would be the one particle that linked quantum physics with Newtonian physics and help out with some of these things that we notice as spooky action, if you will, in quantum physics, where... We have to explain things using probabilities of electron locations where do I start? There's so much here that we have to cover in order to understand why the Higgs boson was considered to be the God particle. It was simply called the God particle as a metaphor to describe... There's this quote of Albert Einstein where he talks about how God doesn't play dice with the universe. In other words, he was trying to say that things are quantifiable and are not put up to some sort of random chance. And this was his sort of way to describe the issues with the probabilities that one might encounter when one's dealing with quantum mechanics. And it doesn't play so nicely when you're talking about Newtonian mechanics or the macro world physics in the sphere of things that we can see, okay? And so it was considered to be the God particle because it was thought that only it would be like God. It would be like the creator of the universe and tie these two massive fields of scientific inquiry together. Of course, what the issue was is when they discovered the Higgs boson, it was observed and it did not fulfill all the roles that it was expected to fill. So it quickly was only a brief blurb in the news, but it was a massive discovery. Believe me, anytime you discover any type of new particle in quantum physics, it is a massive discovery. I mean, it is something else that exists, but it didn't quite explain how gravity works as they hoped it would. So it was indeed not the God particle, as you would say, that they expected it to be. However, the notion of a God particle, just so that it's clear to you, it has really nothing to do with deities in this case. It's just a description of how... things might tie Newtonian physics to quantum physics. Does that make sense? Did I help out at all?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have a quantum mechanic?
What?
Do you have a quantum mechanic, sir? Does your quantum often break down?
That's a great joke. That's a great joke. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, anyway, I think we're getting off track here, so let's try to get back into the fifth stage of the alchemical process. If you don't mind, sir, allow me to proceed.
If you'd like to talk about fermentation, it is your podcast.
Well, that's what we're going
to
do.
I'd love to know, are you using in the sense of this as being the process of transformation and purification? Is that what you're talking about, separating the spirit from the body? Is that what we mean when we say fermentation? What do we mean?
Well, what we mean is an operation marked by the purification of the product that was assembled in the previous stage into a ferment.
It's okay if you'd like to start over. I won't hold it against you.
Let's break down what fermentation really is.
Okay.
Now, one wouldn't traditionally think that decay was a form of cleansing, but much like the phoenix eternally dying unto itself so that it can be reborn from its own ashes. Fermentation provides a necessary decomposition that will allow it to occupy a higher level of being. This operation is marked by the purification of a product that was assembled in the previous stage into a ferment to ensure the full integration.
It sounds like we've got some sort of alarm going off in the studio. I'm not sure what that noise is. Perhaps your friend Patricia could help out.
I'll be right back.
That's between you and me, folks. We both know that fermentation in chemistry, of course, it's a conversion of sugars into alcohol and carbon dioxide by bacteria. And it makes some great, great, wonderful beverages. The alchemical fermentation, of course, is just some sort of symbolic, mystical process lacking any basis in the principles of chemistry. But you can do great things with fermentation. Let me tell you, if you just have some grape juice, a little extra sugar, you buy some yeast at the grocery store, you throw that in there with the grape juice, and you can ferment some wonderful things. Oh great. You'll have a wonderful... Yeah, of course, it does take a couple of months, but this has nothing to do with alchemy. But it will make you feel like an alchemist. Especially if you don't disinfect your bottles, it's very important that you didn't disinfect the bottles. You can get very sick from the yeast, and you will experience an alchemical process.
What an alchemical process we experience that way? Tell me.
I would call it hallucination.
Oh.
And extreme food poisoning.
That sounds like a sickness, not a process.
Well, most things that cause you to hallucinate are actually just toxins which are having a reaction with your nervous system in your body, your endocrine system, your nervous system. These react very badly to different kinds of food poisoning and or other toxic substances, which can make you feel like you're quite a wizard.
Isn't everyone a wizard? I feel like a wizard some days. What about you, Ted? Well, just because you're wearing a pointy hat with that robe with stars all over it and waving a wand around doesn't actually make you a wizard. I mean, it's a great cosplay. I mean, I like your long white beard looking like Merlin. Yeah. Well, the cartoon Merlin. Yeah. Yeah, the Disney one. Yeah. Yeah, that one. Okay. Sorry. We got off track.
I'm pretty sure that's a straw, not a magic wand, and I'm pretty sure that's just white powder on his beard. It's not supposed to look that way. He had a bit of a spill as I was coming through the door. It was like a puff of smoke in there, but it was just a bit powdered. I don't know, but it's left me feeling quite odd.
I'm sorry. I hope you're feeling all right or well enough to continue.
Oh, yes. I just feel so invigorated. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're invigorated and happy to be here and enjoying your time and this discussion with me. Have we covered fermentation well enough there, sir? I feel like you've gone on a minute.
I don't think you covered it at all.
Oh.
I think maybe you got distracted by some sort of alarm noises in the background. I don't know. I was hoping that might have been Samantha calling me back, but it was not.
No. Oh, I forgot to ask you, how did your date go?
I did inquire. I did wait the appropriate week and a half before you call, and then I did make the initial contact. I reached out. I attempted contact, as they say, and I'm still waiting for a response. But I have high hopes, and I'm hoping that maybe there will still be an opportunity for some sort of courtship.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck with that. One can never really tell what's going on a woman's mind. I don't believe all the science in the world could solve that. Anyway, back to the process of fermentation. Now we're going to attempt this again. Hopefully there will be no interruptions. All right. One wouldn't traditionally think of decay as a form of cleansing, but much like the phoenix, eternally dying unto itself so that it can be reborn from its own ashes, fermentation provides a necessary decomposition that will allow it to occupy a higher level of being. The operation is marked by the purification of the product that was assembled in the previous stage.
What exactly is that product that we're talking about in the previous stage? What are you referring to?
What? Didn't you listen to the last episode? Come on.
Well, I recall that you were telling us about conjunction, but it's not quite clear to me. We were discussing the dimensions of consciousness, intellect, and logic, and how that had something to do related to the spirit, but it wasn't clear to me what exactly those reagents or those outcomes of each of these phases of alchemy are. It's still unclear to me exactly what it is that we're conjuncting, if you will.
Well, I apologize that you're not really up to speed on this. I feel like your education has failed you, that you can't understand higher concepts. That's odd for a physicist with 3 PhDs.
I have earned at least 4 PhDs through the normal route, and I have one additional PhD that...
I feel like this is a really heady thing. It's really hard to explain. It's a rough topic. It's not for everybody. Anyway, we'll back up one if you'd like. We'll recover conjunction if you want to.
Well, I was just thinking that it would help the audience.
Oh, yes. For the audience's sake, we'll definitely help them, those folks. Okay. Conjunction is the reuniting of the soul and the body after purification of fire, water, air. This is the part of the great work where we begin to operate from a higher intelligence. In this stage, there is a reconciling of opposing forces within an individual whose masculine and feminine hemispheres, left and right brain, if you will, are no longer warring and have begun to harmonize. A mystic's heart and mind have now been open and seeking balance. This is called the alchemical marriage, by the way, the joining of forces. Now, are we clear enough? Clear as mud for you? Gotcha, Professor. Moving on to fermentation for the 50th time.
Well, again, what is it that we're putrefying, if you will, with this fermentation? Is it the joining of the male and the female aspects of the mind? Is that what you're putrefying? Or you're fermenting? Is that what we're talking about?
We are...
What exactly is becoming this phoenix that rises out of these ashes? What are the ashes...
Removing the negative aspects of your own personality, the taints on your soul, if you will. Get those right out of there. And that's what this whole process is about, is becoming a much more pure soul than you ever were.
I see.
Now, can I move on to fermentation?
You can do whatever you like. It's your podcast. I was just trying to think... If there was some sort of analogy in chemistry that might be explained by something like this, other than the fermentation of, say, alcohol with sugars and yeast, of course, other things ferment, if you will, anything in the world that undergoes some sort of rotting process, any sort of biological matter, of course, is going to break down. We have many different smaller organisms all over the planet, which will break down.
Let me give you a good analogy here, sir. It's a bit like the process that turns a caterpillar into a butterfly.
Okay.
Do you understand that process, any, mister, sir, Professor Frunk?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about the phases of metamorphosis that the common butterfly would go through, of course, it would start out as a caterpillar, and then it would undergo the phase of a pupa. I think butterflies... use a
chrysalis.
I am a chemist, not a biologist, but I believe that's correct. Of course, they undergo the process of growing their wings and their antennae and these various different structures while they're in the
chrysalis.
Then, when they have developed these, much like the puberty of the American male, once they've, or female, once they've developed their new and mature organs, they're able to cut free of their
chrysalis
and spread their wings and let the blood flow into their wings, and then they're able to fly. I'm not quite sure how fermentation, which is the breakdown of one thing into its constituent parts, is the same thing as the complications of metamorphosis and becoming a different form of life. However, if you say that they're similar, I can see that there is change, and I can acknowledge that between these two states, there is change.
Okay. I'm glad you can see that metaphor works. I'm grateful for your understanding of hyperbole.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements. Please support our sponsors. Just imagine this could be your advertisement. Please reach us at theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com to provide sponsorship. And now, back to the show.
Did we move on?
I think so. I think we'll move forward a little bit, sir, if that's all right with you.
All right, great. Again, I am just a guest here.
Would you enjoy learning about distillation?
I would be pleased to learn about distillation.
Okay.
As we both know, distillation in chemistry, of course, is when we distill one substance from another substance.
Well, good. Now, in alchemy, distillation would be distilling the pure essence from that little mess you made in the processes prior to this one. Okay? When you've pulled yourself apart emotionally, mentally, physically, and then swirled it around in the fluids of life, reduced by the flames of existence. Distillation brings out your purest self, your highest essence, your quintessence. That higher self that we've all been looking for, I believe, or at least we have here at the studio, whatever mind and method we prefer to use. And that is alchemy, and that's why we've chosen this. It's all metaphor, right? You said, no, Ted, that is the wrong word. Metamorphosis, that's the right. Thank you for holding up the cue card. Slow it down. Break it down. Metamorphosis. Thank you. Thank you, Ted. Appreciate that. Metamorphosis.
Just to clarify that the alchemical concept of distillation is not equivalent to the scientific process which we consider distillation, which involves the extraction of the humid part of substances by the virtue of heat. As I mentioned before, it's one of those three main principles of phase transitions leading to the formation of vapor and the subsequent condensation by cold, if you will. Perhaps you've seen in some sort of scientific lab, you've seen the process where you have one flask or beaker of one substance, and then perhaps you'll have a glass tube which connects over to another body, and you allow, through the process of condensation, you would allow the vaporous form of one material to distill into the more purified form by taking out some sort of solvent. In this case, it was most likely water, because water comes out as steam and can condensate upon the inside of a glass tube. It's a well-established technique. It's used to separate components of a mixture based on the differences of their volatilities. Is that similar?
I'm sorry, that sounded correct, but honestly, I really wasn't listening.
Oh, well, I hope that you'll want to listen in the future. I am offering very intelligent information here. Many people can learn from this information, as I'm trying to learn from you. Please explain to me how one distills the spirit. What are the things that one is separating? Are you putting your spirit over a heat source and using some form of a glass tube to condensate out some other aspect of the spirit? Is that what you're doing in this form? Mm-hmm.
I like to use lava. Magma, you know, the hot fire.
Wow.
No. Okay, anyway. Yeah, well, basically, you're...
Just talk to me about these things. Tell me what you think. What do you think of when you think of the word alchemy and distillation? Let's get down to it. Let's put aside all our texts. Let's get into the conversation here, if you will. I'll come down to your level. I'll try something new for the first time. Let's just talk about it. As you would anyone in the grocery store.
Condescending. You're right, Ted. Okay, that's fair enough.
I'm sorry, I saw a physical reaction there. Did I say something wrong? Sometimes I get myself into trouble.
Let me just burn all this research that has taken thousands of years together. It's worthless. It's meaningless. isn't it?
Oh, in fact, that's what science is. It's the further exploration of these same ideas. We've just explored them a little more.
Okay.
We've had another 300 years or so.
Another 300 years or so.
Seems that I've stupefied the blind alchemist. He seems to be getting up and walking out of the studio. I'm not exactly sure what's going on. Perhaps it was something that I said. I'm not 100% sure. I was just wondering, Patricia, I was hoping, I apologize for earlier. I didn't mean to be rude to you when I was coming to the studio. I was just wondering if perhaps you might be able to double check this phone number that you gave me. I was looking at it and I wasn't quite sure if the last number here was a 7. I mean, I did reach out on this telephone number and I was hoping for some sort of response. Oh, I see. Oh, you told her that you didn't. You thought I was too hurt. Ow.
Well, that certainly is a shame. I believe even nerds deserve love, Patricia. That's true. He is very nerdy. But he, like I said, even nerds deserve love, right? Well, I know he's got a head like an onion and he smells weird. I get it. Look at his glasses, for God's sake. Yeah, well, I mean, it was your idea to give Samantha that number. Did he leave a message? Did he talk to her? No. What kind of message did you leave, sir?
I just said that I was very excited to meet her and that she sounded lovely. That I like the idea of a lady that wears glasses and that I was into intelligent, strong, free-thinking women. I thought these were polite things to say and that I would love to, as you mentioned, I had been updating my dance repertoire. I had restudied the physics of movement and, that I felt quite confident that I would be able to, pick a fancy enough restaurant for her. Perhaps it was a bit too much.
Perhaps. I'm no expert with women myself. I don't believe anyone actually is. If a man tells you he knows everything there is to know about women, he is obviously lying. That's my thought. Alchemy, for the most part, we can liken it to this. This is the separation of yourselves. You have your higher self and your lower self. And everybody wants to be their higher self, right? They're more involved. They're more compassionate, more loving, caring, kind. Their Jesus self. That's a good way to say that, maybe. Everybody wants to be that. And then you have your lower self, your carnal self. You know, that self that just wants to fuck, fight, eat. The alchemical process is a bit like walking into a room and finding a turd on the floor. Now, your lower self, being the pleasure-driven beast that it is, will probably just leave that shit there. But your higher self would pick that up, clean that spot, and be better for it, having learned something in that process that cleanliness is, in fact, important. And to be your quintessential self, you have to hone perfection. Is that a good analogy for you, sir? Or are we following that one?
Oh, yes. It's easy for me to follow that cleanliness is next to godliness, as they say. If you're willing to clean up feces off your own floor, that's probably a good indication that you're willing to do a little bit of self-help. I've investigated that sometimes in my life, the self-help section of the bookstore. When it comes to the involvement of trying to get along with ladies, but I was never very successful. When I tried to enact the game back in the 90s, that didn't work at all. Peacocking with purple top hats has nothing to do with the fairer sex, as far as I can tell.
Did you have a purple top hat?
Very briefly. Very briefly.
That would have been cool. Did you have a purple lab coat in those days?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
No, I tried a gold lab coat with a purple hat. It was, I thought, a very well color-coordinated system. In fact, reminded me of some of the my favorite reagents and some great neon lights that I love to electrify in my spare time, and my Tesla coil, which puts off a very nice purple hue. However, it did not work at all with the ladies, I'm sad to say.
Were there ladies in the laboratory at this time? Have you ever been around a lady?
Of course, yes. There's many female scientists in the lab. It's an equal opportunity employment area at the all the universities at which I work.
Okay. All right. Well, so you have, in fact, been near a woman, like 5 feet, 20 feet? What's your range here of contact with a person of the opposite sex?
I was just near Patricia when I came into the room. I would say she was within 1.5 feet. That, I would say, is probably the closest I've been to a woman other than my mother in quite some time.
Well, that's a fairly close approximation.
Yeah, I thought we were quite proximal.
Quite proximal. It's fairly close for you, yeah. Did your palms sweat? Knees weak? Was mom's spaghetti on your sweater already?
No.
Put your feet on the floor.
No.
Is that something that should happen?
So you were, in fact, not ready for the rap battle in the laboratory that day. Okay, we're moving on. All right. Our body, mind, and soul are the substance being concentrated for this duration. That's what this whole process is about. You know what I mean? Are you understanding me? It's hard to nail down good metaphors for things that most people don't even believe in, like spirit or science. So open communication is awfully hard because you never truly understand another person's perspective. Am I right? Do you find that is true?
I find that to be quite true. I've never once understood another person's perspective in my entire life. In fact, I'm often find myself just asking endless questions about other people, like why on earth would a person do that? What are they thinking? Yes, that's a common experience for me.
Well, I think it happens to everyone, regardless of IQ. You said your IQ was 337. Is that what you said?
Oh, no, of course not. No, 237.
Oh, okay. 237. Well, that's still pretty high. I mean, you're probably making Einstein look dumb, aren't you?
That is, of course, if you believe in the nature of those IQ tests, as we've all discussed, there. We're quite biased in certain forms of culture, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure that psychology is even a real science. We'll just leave it at that. I don't want to insult members of your audience.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's fair. You don't really think psychology is a soft science, right? Open to interpretation. Is that really your problem with it?
Let's just say it's a limp science.
It's a limp science. Okay. It's a flaccid science. No good for fun or pleasure.
Yes, I like that word. Let's say flaccid. It's a flaccid science.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Psychology is a flaccid science. Not fit for getting hard and doing the real science. Like quantum physics.
Well, it just comes to when you're making empirical observations in psychology experiments, it can be quite difficult to create a realistic control environment when you're discussing facets of the human mind, as you've mentioned several times, and as what we've discovered, each human mind is quite susceptible and very subjective based on its own biases and the common person's beliefs and their faiths and the many things that they might believe in. Of course, and their interpretation of the experience, it's not something that one can really empirically measure. Unless we're talking about the field of neuropsychology, where...
So what we're really saying here is it's not measurable, so it can't possibly be real. Maybe we just haven't developed a device to measure it. Have you thought of that, sir?
Well, that is true. I mean, we are getting closer with many forms of magnetic resonance.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements. Please support our sponsors. Just imagine this could be your advertisement. Please reach us at theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com to provide sponsorship. And now, back to the show.
We are getting closer with many forms of magnetic resonance where we can indeed see the blood flow in the brain as people are thinking, and we can analyze very small, refined measures this energy dispersion, but there is nothing that really truly is observable to explain what the human experiences as consciousness. And I'm not suggesting that there is indeed no practical empirical evidence to be had there. Indeed, I would say that psychology is one of the most burgeoning fields of science where there is the most to be discovered that we have today. It's less refined than the empirical evidence that we see in chemistry, but that has much to do with the presentation of the experiments than it does indeed with the possibility of discovery itself. It's just harder science, and in some ways...
So there's no validity to the Heart-Mind Institute whatsoever, is what you're saying. They have not measured consciousness field around a human being stretching out 8 feet at all. They haven't done that.
No, I'm just saying the presentation of it in today...
That's not science.
Let's say...
They haven't done that at all. It's not real. There's more made-up science.
Let's say perhaps in some ways psychology today is where chemistry was when it was alchemy.
Uh-huh. Well, okay. That's good, I guess.
There's a long way to go.
That's a good analogy, a good comparison. It is a young science? Is it younger than... How young is psychology? How old is physics?
That's a very good question. I would say all forms of science are probably around the same age. I mean, we've always been asking these questions.
Always.
How we define the definition of psychology is probably where one, maybe it's the etymology of psychology that we should look at to really see when that word was first used, and maybe that would describe when that science came about, because I think it was probably called something else before it was psychology. Again, I'm not a psychologist, so there might be...
Well, if we break the words down, psyche, you know, mind, well, older than that. We can take it back. It means soul. So psychology is knowledge of the soul, meaning...
Or breath.
Knowledge of the subconscious mind, because I believe that's where the soul lives.
I think psyche in the Greek language originally meant breath.
What were you saying? You're talking over me as a rude jackass.
I was saying that I think that psyche in Greek originally meant breath, and then it later became soul or spirit. But
it's possibly... As in breath of life, maybe?
In many ways, I think these concepts were interchangeable in the old days. Breath, soul, spirit, these different things.
It also means plan.
Logos, of course, means speech or word or reason.
Mm-hmm. How do we get from soul to mind?
Psychology, indeed, is the study of the knowledge of the soul, right?
Well,
but in modern terms, we consider it more mind than soul, I think.
According to neurolinguistic programming, NLP, it's also, I guess, a flaccid science, neurology of the brain. It deals mostly with the subconscious mind, making changes, rewriting the subroutines of the human mind that, you know, the habits, your base habits, the things that you've learned that you've really aren't good for you and that you don't know you do, getting in there and rewriting that. I think that's kind of what psychology attempts to do as well. Maybe neurolinguistic programming will be the new hard science of psychology in the future.
Perhaps it might be. I think a lot of effort has been put in place to try to tie neuroscience with psychology. There are studies indeed called neuropsychology in which they try to do more empirical studies upon patients where, you know, as I was saying before, the involvement of magnetic resonance or the study of neurotransmitters, the use of chemicals, pharmaceuticals, of course, would be widely used in neuroscience, more so than in psychology, which is it tends to, you know, depending on the school of psychology, it tends to focus more on behavior or cognitive reactions to impulses rather than so much the brain chemistry. I knew this somewhere in my brain, but it took me a moment to remember it. Of course, it was in the late 19th century when psychology became a science, or was officially referred to as a science. Wilhelm Wundt in Leipzig, Germany, I believe, is one of the first professional psychologists who came up with the first Institute of Psychology in 1879. I believe that's when we can probably consider psychology to be first treated as a science, even though, of course, it was discussed philosophically back in the 16th century.
So it's got some age on it. It's not as young as you like to pretend, I guess.
Well, I mean, 1879, 150 years or so.
That's old. Seems it ought to be beneficial by now, right? Useful? Considered real? Hard science by now? Well, if not, it's on its way to be getting hard. Maybe it's in the psychology lab rubbing up against a hot intern. Sexy young psychological intern. You never know. Getting hard is something that you've never done. Psychology is well on its way. It's getting hard at this moment. Should I continue this innuendo?
I would rather not speak about whether or not I've had erections near women before. That I was just simply making the point that, as we both well know, physics was studied as early as the 17th century. And, you know, I'm sure chemistry as well.
Good to hear. Good to know. That science has been around a long time. I like to think that some of these sciences that we have today are bits and pieces of the old mystery schools that the ancient Greeks and Egyptians had around, kicking around. They had their universities of sorts, learning, teaching these things that we basically ignore today and take as foolish fodder, even evil, perhaps. Knowledge is knowledge. I don't think knowledge in itself is good nor evil. It's its use, its intention.
Well, I don't know. You must speak for yourself. I myself find it greatly invigorating to my spirit to learn new things. Of course, that's why I have so many different degrees. I did say something before about chemistry starting in the 17th century. If you want to get specific, many people might say that it didn't become a proper science until we had Antoine Lavoisier in the 18th century, or Robert Boyle, of course, in the early 18th century, but I believe it actually began a little bit before that. That's just my personal opinion, if you do a little further study.
Well, that's good.
I'm not sure what you mean by when you go to university, you don't recall the things that your teacher tells you. I mean, as a professor myself, I spend a great amount of time trying to involve my students in making sure that they learn the things that I'm trying to teach them. Did you yourself not recall things that you learned in school?
No. Happens all the time.
But you must be a fan of learning. I mean, you've done all this self-study in alchemy.
Oh, yes. Wholeheartedly a fan of learning. I believe a man must learn something every couple days. You'll find yourself learning something new. If you're not, you're not trying. You're not even paying attention. You're not awake. You're not aware if you're not learning. You got to learn. You got to grow. You got to become better than you were yesterday, or even 2 or 3 seconds ago. Self-improvement is the name of the game. That's how we achieve quintessence. That's how we start the great work. That's how we begin the alchemical process, knowing that we must do better than we are now, or we will stay where we are forever, or become worse.
If that's the case, Weiner, would you suggest that one shouldn't learn in a school of higher learning, like a university?
I'm not suggesting someone should not learn in...
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying that they shouldn't learn there or that they wouldn't recall that. Perhaps I didn't exactly hear what you said.
No, no. I believe our miscommunication is when I said we have forgotten. As a collective of humanity, we have forgotten some of the great things that we once knew because, well, my conspiratorial nature, I believe it was intentionally hidden from man that, you know, spirit is real. I believe we could blame Newton, to be honest. The materialistic existence, there's more to it than that. There's more than matter in nature. Otherwise, I don't think the whole ball of wax would stick together. And the substance sticking it together, you would probably call gravity today, which probably is what they meant by ether in days of yore, in the days of old, back beyond centuries upon centuries, building eons of time. We're all trying to explain the same thing in a varying degrees of wordage, of understanding, of perception. But to wholeheartedly deny the substance that holds the entire ball of wax together is utterly ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It's dumb. Matter isn't holding itself together without some kind of outside force. And modern science would call that gravity. Is gravity ether? Is gravity conscious? That's a good question right there. Does gravity have its own conscious? It's got its own thing. Everything in the physical world is a thought.
If we're talking about forces which may hold the essence of matter together, I would suggest that gravity is just one of the forces in physics. In classical mechanics, contact forces, frictional forces, tensional forces, normal forces, air resistance forces, applied forces, action as a distance forces such as gravity, that's why gravity is one of these interesting forces, because it is a force at a distance, like magnetism. It somewhat appears to be magical in a sense, but it's not magical, much like magnetic forces are the right angle of electrical forces. One might conjecture that there might also be some sort of right angle force to gravity. Of course, we do have strong and weak forces as well in physics. I mean, there are many different forces in the universe which hold things together. If we're talking about Newton's laws of motion, you know, that's where specifically these types of forces would come into play. But there are other forces at the quantum level.
Well, what are the quantum forces? Does gravity apply on the quantum level, or apply differently, most likely?
Of course, yes, it applies at the quantum level. Again, I am a quantum physicist, but it's not my main field of study.
I thought you were. Wasn't that one of your degrees from MIT?
Yes, but I do focus more on chemistry each day. Chemistry is my love. I do really appreciate quantum mechanics. There are four fundamental forces of nature, three of which have been described within the framework of quantum mechanics, okay? The quantum field theory. These forces are the electromagnetic force, the strong force, and the weak force. Electromagnetic force is two of those forces, electricity and magnetism. They are, of course, responsible for the binding of electrons to atoms, allowing atoms to work together to form everything that we know. The strong force affects the particles inside the nucleus, while the weak force is responsible for radioactive decay. However, the fourth fundamental force, gravity, is not fully accommodated within the framework of quantum mechanics. It remains a subject of active research. People are still trying to understand gravity. So yes, it does apply on the quantum realm.
Has gravity been upgraded to a law now, or is it still a theory?
All things in science are theories. The concept of laws in science is really just it's a semantics game where people are, they're just simply saying that it's...
Picture, if you will, the gravity police.
Say again?
Picture, if you will, the gravity police. They roll up in their gravity squad car with their sirens blaring. Excuse me, sir. You are defying the laws of physics. laws of gravity.
I feel like this policeman and myself will get along. We sound alike.
Yes, you do. It's a drawing my inspiration for his voice on you. I feel like the gravity police would be nerdy.
Yeah, I feel like the gravity police would have a tractor beam built into their car.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. They'd probably have phasers, too.
They probably don't have to worry about their weapons belts falling down.
No, definitely not. No. I'm going to write you a gravity ticket.
The biggest offenders in the galaxy, of course, would be the black holes. But they have the hardest time writing tickets for those, because once they go there, they never come back.
You're dark, sir. You're very dark.
I think we're getting off track here, but anyway, like I was saying, we probably should take a break.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements. Please support our sponsors.
We ain't got no sponsors. What are you talking about? This whole damn podcast is brought to you by me, because I'm the fucking sponsor here.
And now, back to the show.
That was a nice little side, John. I think we'll kind of try to attempt to wrap this up a little bit.
Did you ever talk about the last, I think we forgot to discuss coagulation.
No, that's what I meant by wrapping it up. We got to go on to coagulation, the last stage in the alchemical process. Now, basically, once you've separated everything, separated your higher and lower self, right? And you've done away with the bad habits, and you've embraced your good habits, and you've spun around in whatever system you want to spin out. Where's the thing that spins, Mr. Laboratory Man?
Are you talking about a...
Centrifuge?
Yes, centrifuge. Yes, I was just thinking there are lots of things that spin.
Right? Okay. Well, yeah, not the merry-go-round. No, that does spin too, Ted. All right, thank you.
The room, I think, is spinning for Ted.
Probably. Once you've separated that stuff and now done away with the bad, embrace the good. Well, embrace the bad and strengthen the good.
You take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life.
You start to coagulate. Coagulation. Back into a solid form, a solid way of perceiving and understanding. Now that you have gained new understanding, new knowledge, you can move forward with this coagulated being that you are now becoming. And then you go forward. And you know what? About three steps later, the process starts all over again. Because you've realized, oh, well, that wasn't pure enough. We're going to have to start this process all over again, back to the start. Buddhism calls it polishing the mirror. You know, you'll never be done. You'll never be done. I think that's why they call it the great work. What do you think?
Well, of course, I think that coagulation is a blood clotting.
Just re-solidification, that's all.
It's an essential process to prevent excessive bleeding. When a blood vessel is injured, it involves the interaction of platelets, which are, of course, a type of blood cell, proteins, and the interaction of the platelets and the liquid part of blood, which is called plasma. The platelets form a clot. And of course, this would occur within a coagulation cascade, which is a series of chemical reactions which involve the clotting factors and leads to the formation of fibrin, a protein that weaves through the platelet plug and reinforces it, forming a stable blood clot. I'm not quite sure which aspect of the spirit would be working in this type of coagulation, but... Of course, we want to always prevent excessive clotting. We wouldn't want that to lead to thrombosis or stroke. So coagulation is very important for the body. It indeed is a vital process for our healing. It helps us resist infection. So I would say that it is indeed important, but it is interesting to me that it's referred to in the stages of alchemy.
Here's a little historical fact for you. Did you know that William Crookes was the discoverer of plasma, blood plasma? Did you know that he was a black man and also died on the steps of a whites-only hospital?
I did not know that. Mm. Are we talking about William Henry Crook, one of President Abraham Lincoln's bodyguards?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't know if he could have been, was he? I don't know. I don't have that knowledge. For Ted, your research is shitty, okay? It's a good quick thinking, trying to educate the folks out there in Radio Land, but get all the facts.
Perhaps we're talking about William G. Crook, who wrote a book about the connection between excess candida albicans and the gut and the multitude of health problems.
I don't know. My notes don't give him that. Ted's not a good note taker. It just says plasma was first discovered by William Crookes in 1879. So we've had that a while. We've had that just as long as psychology and physics, hasn't we?
Well, not physics. It began in the 17th century. But how do you spell this gentleman's last name?
C-R-O-O-K-E-S.
Oh, I see. Crookies.
Me want cookie.
That was where I made a mistake. I thought we were talking about William Crook. C-R-O-O-K.
No, sir. That's the problem with language, isn't it? You need to see all the words to learn, don't you? That's difficult. Well, we've learned something historical today. 1879. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I wonder how he found that in 1879. You think he just walking down the street and stumbled over some plasma? It was like, ooh. Or...
Look, it's plasma in the wild. I see it right there. Bless you.
I don't know. My research mentions that there was a Dr. Charles Richard Drew was an African-American physician renowned for his work with blood plasma. Perhaps that's who you're thinking of. Are you thinking of Charles Richard Drew? As the research into the storage, processing, and shipment of blood plasma saved the lives of hundreds of Britons during World War II, continues to save lives today.
Yeah.
Well, of course, that was World War II. You're talking about a time long before that.
Well, it's in your Rolodex of knowledge somewhere, isn't it, sir?
I'm not sure.
Well, you're not really a bloodologist, are you? You're more of a chemist. So it's a crossing of fields. You may not have the exact knowledge on the subject.
Yes, I am the first to admit there are many things in the world that I do not know. I'm always trying to discover more. I'm always looking forward to learning more, so thank you for the education.
Well, that's what we try to do, right? We try to help motivate, inspire, and educate around here. We here at Alchemy Labs, we believe in edutainment. You know, we try to be educational and fun at the same time.
Sir William Crookes was a British chemist and physicist who worked on spectroscopy and was a pioneer of vacuum tubes, inventing the Crookes tube in 1875. This foundational discovery eventually changed the whole of chemistry and physics. In 1879, Crookes was one of the first scientists to investigate and identify the fourth state of matter, which is now called a plasma. He also devised one of the first instruments for studying nuclear radioactivity, the spinthoscope. Blood plasma was already well known when described by William Harvey and Amortor Cordis in 1628, but knowledge of it probably dates as far back as Vesalius, who lived between 1514 and 1564. The discovery of fibrinogen by William Hansen was in 1770. Charles Richard Drew was an American surgeon and medical researcher in the field of blood transfusions, whose developments improved techniques for blood storage and large-scale blood banks early in World War II.
Well, I hate to use this analogy, but it's much like Bill Cosby and Picture Page. You know, hopefully no one gets upset about that.
Time to get your friends come and learn with Bill.
I have a little picture page that goes in and out with me.
Scandal noted.
Right, definitely. Picture page. I don't remember the words. It's time to watch Bill Cosby
do a picture page with you. Talk about an interesting chemist.
Bill Cosby was a chemist? Oh, I guess he was.
He sure liked to do experiments with Rohypnol, for what they say.
Well, do you think he made his own roofies?
Pudding pop.
No, I don't.
No, I don't.
You know much about Rohypnol.
No, I don't know. I've never been roofied anyone, so I don't even know where you can get roofies.
It it's actually a drug that's called flunitrazepam. It's an essential nervous system depressant. It belongs to a class of drugs that are known as benzodiazepines. It's not approved for medicinal use in the United States by the FDA. It is prescribed to treat insomnia in some other countries, which is surprising. It's infamously associated, of course, as the date rape drug. I won't be taking it on my date. Oh, it can cause extreme drowsiness and blackout. As you mentioned, many of its victims are targeted for sexual assault. The drug is usually placed in some form of alcoholic drink because it has a stronger reaction with alcohol, and sometimes people can't tell the difference between the euphoric effect of intoxication on alcohol and the feeling of Rohypnol at first. The drug's strong amnesia-producing effects can cause victims to have limited or no memory of an assault. It's associated with multiple substance abuse, and it has been used as a means of mitigating the depression that results in using stimulants such as cocaine and methamphetamine. The drug is often abused. It's an interesting substance.
Why do they call it roofies if you just wind up on the floor?
And what can be the use of it is more than I can see. What?
It has many different names. Most common street names for Rohypnol include Circles or Forget Me Pill or the Mexican Valium, which I think is an extremely offensive one. R2, Roach 2, Roaches, Roachies, Roofies, Wolfies. It's called all sorts of things.
Wow. You're very knowledgeable on the street slang for these drugs. How long have you been selling?
I, of course, do not have anything to do with these. It's just a part of my education was in pharmaceuticals.
Let's clarify. You are not an independent street pharmacist.
I am not. In no way am I a pharmacist. I just simply had to do a few courses on pharmaceuticals in order to get my third PhD. And it's very important to understand the chemical reactions of drugs. And it is one of my fascinations.
Good. Okay.
The common side effects of flunitrazepam are drowsiness, sedation, dizziness, amnesia, headaches, confusion, slurred speech, loss of motor coordination, weaknesses, respiratory depression, tremors or twitching, cardiovascular collapse, coma, and of course death.
I didn't read or hear any of that in the commercials. That's pretty dangerous. How did that get made? Why is that a medicine?
I don't think you ever saw a commercial for Rohypnol. It's not a widely advertised drug in this country, at least.
Date not going well? Rohypnol. Be fantastic in a moment.
What do you mean, sir? This is the way I am. I see nothing wrong with it, as I've talked about in the past with you. I mean, we filled an hour. Is there anything more?
Well, I was trying to figure out a way to pull it all together here.
Oh, well, I can do a conclusion.
Well, okay. All right, we'll let you.
In conclusion, alchemy and its stages are a product of mystical thinking and superstition. They lack any validity in the realm of true scientific inquiry. The phase transitions of chemistry, on the other hand, are a well-established phenomena supported by empirical evidence and scientific principles. It's essential to embrace the rigor of true scientific inquiry and discard the fallacious notions of alchemy.
Well, thank you for breaking it down and insulting my entire purpose and being. I am going to go lay down and take a nap now because, well, I might have to cry myself to sleep over that. I am horribly depressed. That was a horrible, horrible blow to my own purpose, my own existence.
I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
No. No. I won't accept that, sir. Your opinion matters not. Because it is a misunderstood mythological science doesn't mean it's any less of a science.
I apologize if I made you feel bad. I simply...
These, sir, are fighting words.
I just simply wanted to say to you that there is a great...
Would you care for some fisticuffs? Uh-huh. What? No. Come on. Queensberry rules, man. Come on.
I have studied all the major forms of self-defense in my study of all the major movements of the body. I will warn you, I am a third-degree black belt, and you may find yourself in a position which you do not enjoy. I would hate to cause you physical harm. I am a rather small individual, but much like many of the monks that I studied with, I can implore quite a lot of force.
Many of the monks.
Okay. All right. Well, calm down. Hey, you're right. Well, you're right. You calm down. Calm down, everybody. This is gonna go side. Ted, put the chair down. Patricia. Okay. All right, everybody, calm down. Okay, Mr. Frump.
Theolidius Frunk.
Professor.
Theolidius Frunk.
We need to back down.
Theolidius Frunk.
That's what I said, Frunk. Just let's take a breath. I invite you on the show, and basically you just piss all over everything I do. Just like, oh, you take your mythology, you make-believe nonsense, and I fuck you. I will deal with this goopy matter stuff all over my hands because I can touch it and feel it and see it. It doesn't make it, that's all that's real.
I simply want to say to you, though, however, there is a great wealth of things that you can learn about. There's no reason to feel bad. Just feel good about the fact that there's so much more that you can learn. Ugh.
No, that's not. You're wrong.
The wonders of chemistry.
Okay, yes, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Learning is all that you can do. It's the most important thing in the world. So go learn chemistry, go learn science, go learn pharmacology, and make better drugs than Rohypnol. That's not a good drug to make, folks.
Yes, do not roofie your friends. It's not a fun game.
Don't roofie your friends. No, it's not a fun time. Let's not do that here.
Very illegal.
Thank you. Very illegal. The gravity police have spoken. It is super illegal to roofie your friends. Well, let's wrap this up. Thank you, Professor, for almost getting in a fight with us today, for being here, for breaking us down, for telling us everything you know.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, listeners, for...
My joy to bring truth to the world.
Yes, it was a good time bringing truth to the world. Light in the darkness, showing the path of the way. That's what we try to do around here, folks, and we appreciate you tuning in, joining us here aboard the Isle of Mind, sailing across seas of frequencies. Now, I'd like to remind you that we are now on iTunes, Spotify, and YouTube. We're up in our game over here. We're doing well. We're doing better. We're doing great. Maybe we'll do better with our next guest, which we don't even have lined up yet. But thank you once again, Professor Theolidius Frunk, for being here with us.
Theolidius Frunk.
Thank you, Patricia, for getting everybody settled. And Ted, whatever it is you do, great job out there. And you, I'm talking to you right now, in your car, laying in your bed with the earphones in. You, yeah, you, with the hair and the face. Be good. You're doing great. Way better than you think you are, I promise you. Thank you for joining us here on the Blind Alchemy Podcast.
We would love to receive your feedback and your questions for advice. Please email us or send us a voicemail. Our address is theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com. Find, like, review, subscribe, and contact us on Facebook and YouTube at The Blind Alchemy Podcast, all one word. Please subscribe to this podcast on your podcast player. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and anchor.fm/theblindalchemypodcast. Please tell all your friends, enemies, and any strangers to listen to our podcast. This will help us bring joy to everyone. Text-to-speech services were provided by freetts.com and readloud.net. some information about the seven stages of the alchemical process were provided by an article with the same name at thealchemist.community. Information about chemical phase transitions was provided by chem.libertexts.org and wikipedia.org. Various audio clips were located on youtube.com. Please see the episode notes for full attribution. We would like to extend a special thank you to the world's greatest musicians, sound designers, and engineers at Hairline Productions for their help with the composition, performance, editing, production, and recording of both the original music and today's show. Please like their content on SoundCloud/Hairline Productions.